Hello, this is Janice Schweizer with the Pantograph for Tuesday, January 21st, 2025. As you might expect, there are many articles related to the inauguration. I will read local and state news items first today, and then we'll look at some of those articles, since I know the full day was covered yesterday on all TV stations. First, on the front page, we have, How Will Madigan Trial Outcome Affect Politics in Illinois? Corruption Charges Put a Spotlight on Money and Influence by Ray Long, Megan Krapow, and Jason Meisner with the Chicago Tribune. The outcome of former Illinois House Speaker Michael Madigan's corruption trial will be watched closely well beyond Chicago's federal courthouse, with the verdict representing a potential make-or-break moment at the Illinois Capitol. As the all-important closing arguments in Madigan's case are on track to wrap up by week's end, Democratic Governor J.B. Pritzker and state lawmakers must now brace themselves for the culmination of a trial that has put a spotlight on Illinois' messy intersection of money, special interests, and power politics. A guilty verdict in the landmark bribery and racketeering case would give elected officials little place to hide. Some observers say the unending marching line of state, city, and suburban officials who have gone to prison already provides a strong incentive to get serious about enacting reforms, but a Madigan conviction would certainly underscore it. If not now, when? Why not? Asked Connie Mixon, an Elmhurst University political science professor who testified as an expert for federal prosecutors in the 2023 trial that sent longtime 14th Ward Alderman Edward M. Burke to prison. Over the years, we've had lots of talk of ethics reform with not nearly enough action. Madigan, 82, a Southwest Side Democrat, and his co-defendant Michael McLean, 77, a former ComEd lobbyist and confidant, have pleaded not guilty to wide-ranging charges, alleging they illicitly squeezed ComEd and AT&T Illinois to give their allies jobs and contracts. Madigan is also accused of abusing his public duties to garner property tax business for his private law firm. After 3 months of evidence featuring more than 60 witnesses and scores of wiretapped recordings and undercover videos, closing arguments are slated to begin Wednesday and last for 3 days. The jury is expected to start deliberating the week of January 27th, with a decision possible as soon as the end of the month. The stakes couldn't be higher for Madigan and McLean, who even at their advanced age could face long stints in prison if convicted. But there's a wider impact as well, one that could be felt from the Capitol building in Springfield to Chicago's City Hall. The trial has amplified the findings of the Tribune's, quote, culture of corruption, close quote, series last year that documented how weak laws on campaign finance, ballot access, lobbying, ethics, and oversight, and the Byzantine structure of local government, among other issues, have helped dishonest politicians thrive in Illinois. 4 of the state's last 11 governors and nearly 40 Chicago aldermen in the last half century have served time in prison. A steady stream of state lawmakers and local suburban officials also have been caught illegally engorging themselves at the public trough, with others, such as State Senator Emil Jones III, still awaiting trial. The last major push in Illinois for reform came 16 years ago after the legislature impeached and removed Governor Rod Blagojevich. His successor, fellow Democrat Pat Quinn, created the Illinois Reform Commission, which made progress in Springfield, but in the end did little to enact the sweeping changes that advocates wanted. That's because lawmakers, allergic to game-changing reform, worked vigorously to block aggressive proposals and made sure to give themselves plenty of loopholes to slip through the various restrictions they did approve. Mixon said what's needed is a complete overhaul of ethics laws in Illinois. looking at everything from conflicts of interest to campaign finance regulation and unchecked lobbying activity. In the end, we as citizens have a right to open and honest government, Mixon told the Tribune. Our government is supposed to provide for the public good and to serve the public, which it is clearly not doing if we keep having all of these corruption issues. It erodes our public trust in government at a time when trust in all levels of government is declining. Kent Redfield, a campaign finance expert and the state's ever-growing roll call, said the state's ever-growing roll call of public officials in trouble speaks to the need for systemic reforms to rein in the free-willing political environment highlighted by the Madigan case. Redfield, a retired professor at the University of Illinois at Springfield, warned that state policymakers too often declare the system worked whenever a politician is caught up in a corruption case, and then they lean on that as an excuse to avoid tightening restrictions on themselves. If you just focus on weeding out the bad apples, that's just kind of a guarantee for further crop failure, Redfield said. Regardless of whether the jury decides what Madigan and McLean did was a crime, the trial has provided a deep and often distasteful dive into how Illinois government really works. Madigan's attorneys, as well as the ex-speaker himself testifying in his own defense, have argued that much of what the government alleged was illegal bribery was actually just everyday politicking, where lobbyists are paid to legally influence legislators on behalf of clients, and job recommendations are merely an offshoot of an elected official's power. While Madigan was certainly powerful, his attorneys have argued he wielded it benevolently, providing jobs and opportunities for his constituents, and always with an eye on protecting the Democratic Party agenda and blue-collar families. He has never made a demand on anybody, Madigan defense lawyer Tom Breen said in his opening statement in October, at one point slapping the lectern for effect. If anyone says he did, that's bull. That's just bull. Prosecutors, however, are primed to argue that with the decline of the old patronage system, in which politicians gave government jobs to political workers who helped them get elected, Madigan got his favored precinct captain's jobs with private companies instead. In exchange, they said, Madigan helped support those companies' agendas in Springfield. Madigan wanted, ComEd gave, and ComEd got, Assistant U.S. Attorney Sarah Stryker told jurors during her opening statement, and later added, Madigan wanted, AT&T gave, and AT&T got. Jurors have seen floods of strongly worded emails from McLean, purportedly sent at Madigan's behest, urging ComEd representatives to hire certain people, regardless of their qualifications or even interest in the positions available. McLean also bombarded ComEd executives with demands to increase payments for a clouted law firm run by Madigan ally Victor Reyes, at one point letting everyone at the utility know how valuable Reyes is to our friend. The trial also centered on a separate alleged scheme where prosecutors say Madigan put pressure on deep-pocketed real estate developers to hire Madigan's law firm for tax appeal work. At the government's discretion, then-Alderman Daniel Solis, who was secretly cooperating with the FBI after being confronted with his own misdeeds, asked Madigan for help getting an appointment to a lucrative state board seat in exchange for his help connecting Madigan to developers, according to trial evidence. The overall pattern, prosecutors alleged, shows Madigan as a schemer who is willing to abuse his extraordinarily powerful position to enrich himself and his allies. Madigan's defense, however, has painted him as the exact opposite, a hard-working public servant who didn't immediately object to some of the shady statements on wiretap calls because he was by nature non-confrontational. In a surprising move, late in the trial, Madigan took the stand in his own defense. Over the course of 4 days, he completely disavowed any knowledge of certain alleged schemes and gave innocuous explanations for some of his statements on wiretaps. Madigan also took steps where he could to distance himself from McLean, a close friend, confidant, and frequent dinner companion he's known since their days together in the legislature in the 1970s. During a lengthy and tough cross-examination, Madigan was asked whether he reciprocated McLean's loyalty. "I don't think I was as loyal to him as he was to me," Madigan said. "I would have differences of opinion with him. I didn't always accept his advice." In a more poignant moment, Madigan was asked by McLean's lawyer, Patrick Cotter, whether their friendship survived. "It did until recently," Madigan replied. McLean's attorneys, meanwhile, are banking on an argument that everything he did can be categorized as perfectly legal lobbying. His often professed loyalty to Madigan, his real client, is not a sign of his participation in a criminal enterprise, they say, but in an effort to maintain good relations to support his lobbying career. Jurors have not heard that McLean was already found guilty of bribery-related charges in the 2023 ComEd 4 trial, though attorneys for him and three other defendants, including Hooker, are fighting to get that conviction reversed in light of a U.S. Supreme Court reinterpreting parts of a federal bribery statute. As the Madigan trial has unfolded, broad discussions are beginning to take place among good government advocates to determine whether the current political atmosphere and upcoming gubernatorial election cycle will represent an opportunity to press forward for changes now, said Alyssa Kaplan, Executive Director of Reform for Illinois. Among the ideas getting bandied about are strengthening the Legislative Inspector General and the Legislative Ethics Commission, as well as seeking to improve the revolving door clause overseeing lawmakers going into lobbying, conflicts of interest, and other avenues of government oversight, Kaplan said. Separately, she said her nonprofit group, which tracks money in politics and advocates for transparency, wants to take another shot at passing legislation to unmask dark money donations so that original unnamed donors to super PACs would be disclosed. As a new legislative session begins, Pritzker and state lawmakers will be able to consider all angles if they want to go beyond a small bore set of reforms they enacted in the governor's first term. Just one of many potential reforms that touch upon is issues rising from the sprawling Madigan-related investigation is how Illinois allows state-regulated utilities to give campaign donations to politicians, a practice that Mixon, the Elmhurst University professor, said should be banned. Madigan once called upon ComEd and Exelon to raise $450,000 at their annual fundraiser for the Illinois Democratic Party during negotiations over one of the massive pro-utility bills that would later pass the General Assembly, according to Fidel Marquez, a senior ComEd executive who pleaded guilty in the probe and gave the estimate at the previous ComEd 4 case. In fact, state campaign records show ComEd and corporate parent Exelon, as well as AT&T, were among the highest corporate givers to Illinois politicians over five straight election cycles, starting in 2010 and through the 2018 state campaign seasons, those most closely linked to the time period surrounding the Madigan investigation. Olivia Jacobs writes, MLK Chess Tournament highlights diversity and sportsmanship. Arnav Sharma found a challenging environment early at the 38th annual Martin Luther King Scholastic Chess Tournament. Arnav, a seventh grader at Evans Junior High School who has been playing since kindergarten, won his first chess match of the day at the tournament and held Monday at Illinois State University's Bone Student Center. He faced off against eighth grader Keegan Moody from Brimfield for nearly an hour. "It was pretty tense," Arnav said of the first game. "It was a good round. I feel like I got to be ready. There's a lot of harder opponents. It's a bigger tournament." Arnav said chess is the place where only he can control and choose what he wants to do. Amy Green, president of the Bloomington Normal Area Scholastic Chess Association that hosts the tournament, said the event brought nearly 300 students from approximately 25 schools throughout the Bloomington Normal and Peoria area. Some of those schools included Benjamin, Cedar Ridge, Towanda, Tri-Valley, East Peoria, St. Philomena, Colleen Hoost, North Point Reservoir Gifted Academy, Thomas Metcalf, Brimfield Grove, Evans Junior High, Chittix, Charter Oak, and Mark Bills. Each grade has the opportunity to play 5 rounds, with the exception of junior high school students who play 4. The annual tournament was started by Garrett Scott, who died in 2022. Scott was a chess advocate, but was also a participant in King's 1963 March on Washington, where he delivered the famous I Have a Dream speech. Scott started the tournament in 1987 as a way to encourage young children to respect others. At the end of the tournament, the Garrett Scott Sportsmanship Award is given to one player. We have tournaments all the time, but this one, we really focus on the diversity of the players and sportsmanship, Green said. So the players understand, you know, I can play anybody, any age, any ethnicity, or anything like that. Green said this year's tournament is likely the first to reach attendance seen prior to the COVID-19 pandemic. More students were representing the Peoria area this year as well. Monday marked the second year of tournament play for Paige Zalucha, 7, of Towanda Elementary School. Her father, Kevin Zalucha, is the coordinator for the chess team at Towanda. Paige said she likes how all the chess pieces move across the board and particularly enjoys being able to steal the queen piece and watch her opponent's reaction. Kevin Zalucha said his daughter has fun when she beats a grown-up at the game, too. Another second-timer was Nora Maxfield, a first grader from Thomas Metcalf School. Nora is the daughter of Andy and Julie Maxfield. Her mother, a volunteer at the tournament, said Nora started playing chess at home when she was 4, but then officially joined chess club in kindergarten. I think just the fun atmosphere with friends, Julie Maxfield said, of what her daughter enjoys about chess. The tournament environment is very fun. Nora said she likes to play other games with friends between the matches. After her first 2 rounds of play, she said she felt good about going into the additional rounds and great about playing, especially when she wins. Emily Dawson, chess coach for Mark Bills Middle School in Peoria, drove a bus of students from all over Peoria to participate in Monday's tournament. 6th grader Nicholas Rodriguez started playing chess in 3rd grade at Franklin Primary School, but now attends the Reservoir Gifted Academy in Peoria. Rodriguez won his first match of the day and said he felt pretty confident about the other matches ahead. Rodriguez said he enjoys the game's competitive nature and the many possible ways that a match can unfold. Honoring King's legacy can take many forms, he said. It doesn't have to be a ceremony. It can be just like a chess tournament, he said. The tournament was the first such competition outside of Peoria for 6th grader Gavin Hoban, who is also a student and newer chess player at Reservoir. Hoban said he enjoys how chess challenges the brain and how concentrated you have to be to play it. While he lost the first round to a highly rated player, Hoban believed he was going to do better in the next rounds. 8th grader Brandon Williams, a fellow Reservoir student, was very nervous during his initial round of play, as it was his first time competing in a tournament such as this. He recently learned notation, how moves are recorded for the game, the weekend leading up to the tournament. He said he was looking forward to less stress in the other rounds as the day continued. Green, from the local chess association, said the annual tournament acts as a warm-up for many who will go on to participate in the Illinois State Chess Tournament set for March 8th and 9th at the Bone Student Center. That tournament typically sees around 500 to 600 kids from across Illinois. After Green's son graduated from college, she said chess is the one activity in which she stayed involved. I love watching this, the tournament, because I can see the kids from kindergarten all the way through 12th grade and watch them grow up, she said. So it's just like the relationships you get to build with the kids. It's awesome, for sure. Results of Monday's tournament will be available later online at bnasc.org. Next, we have Recovery-Oriented Systems of Care Asking for Community Input by Matus Janik. The McLean County Recovery-Oriented Systems of Care, or ROSC, Community Coalition is asking for input from residents related to mental health and substance abuse recovery. We are hoping to reach as many folks across the community and age range, said Associate Director of Community Health, Carrie Knapp. This in itself really just helps us get a pulse as to where the community's level of support is and readiness for change. The ROSC Community Coalition has launched the 2025 Community Survey, which will help them understand what resources and services need updating before the coalition readies its strategic plan. Community needs are ever-evolving, so our strategic plan should be ever-evolving to constantly stay up to date with the needs of the community, Knapp added. The coalition is made up of individuals with backgrounds in mental health and substance abuse recovery, offering access to services across different local agencies and nonprofits within the recovery service community. It is funded in part by the Illinois Department of Human Services Division of Substance Use Prevention and Recovery. Chestnut Health Systems serves as the lead agency for the state-funded ROSC grant, and the primary goal is to empower the community to lead and drive the coalition's efforts. Kat Hayes, a community health specialist for recovery support with the coalition, said the survey includes questions regarding harm reduction services like Narcan and syringe service programs, whether people with a mental illness or those who use drugs deserve respect, and what else the community needs in terms of services or supplies. Some of that is looking at if McLean County residents know where to find information on what resources to access, Hayes said. The other part is we wanted to see where things were with our marketing strategies. As of Friday, there were 125 responses to the survey, with about 50% respondents being between the age of 25 and 34, Knapp said. The second highest age range to respond is between 35 to 44, but the biggest barrier to the survey is reaching the senior population. That is something our team is working to identify and strategize in the days ahead of how we can get some surveys out to individuals 65 and older, Knapp said. Hayes said they have an English and Spanish version of the survey, and participants who complete the full survey can be entered in a raffle for a $25 Walmart gift card. The survey was set to close on February 1st, but will now be extended until February 7th. Visit tinyurl.com/community survey2025 to access the community survey and see the services provided and shared through the coalition. Next, we'll look at the Veterans Corner, where we have Army Recruits 2025 Benefits Guide and Legacy Memorial Access by Jerry A. Vogler, Sr. The Army announced that recruiting results for the first half of the fiscal year totaled nearly 30,000 toward the goal of 61,000. This total is 6,000 more than the recruiting totals at this time last fiscal year. Army efforts like the Future Soldier Preparatory Courses, training camps for applicants to get up to snuff with Army standards, have allowed nearly one quarter of the 55,000 soldiers recruited last year to be able to join the Army. This one quarter of new soldiers would have been denied entry into the Army because of deficiencies in overweight, education shortcomings, or past drug or criminal records. The VA is pleased to present the 2025 VA Federal Benefits Guide for Veterans, Dependents, Survivors, and Caregivers. This revised handbook contains a comprehensive listing of VA programs, including phone numbers and websites for easy reference. The annual Federal Benefits Guide hosts a wealth of information on most VA benefits and services, including compensation, life insurance, pension, and fiduciary services, education benefits, economic development and employment, home loan guarantee programs and housing assistance and mental health resources. The guide also provides qualification guidelines for distinct periods of service to clarify eligibility for veterans with service spanning both peace and wartime periods. This guide is available in both print and digital formats. Veterans and family members can access the guidebook on VA's website by browsing, quote, VA 2025 Benefits Guide, close quote. The information at this website was effective October 10th, 2024, the cutoff due to publication requirements. The most up-to-date information can be found at va.gov or go to the specific links provided in the publication to access information on the program which the veteran may be interested in. Veterans can also call the VA at 1-800-827-1000 from 8 a.m. to 9 p.m. Eastern Time, Monday through Friday, to speak with a representative. The Department of Veterans Affairs Veterans Legacy Memorial is a digital platform dedicated to the memory of veterans and service members, for all veterans to tell their own story before they pass away. The VLM is expanding to include a Your Story, Your Legacy feature that will allow veterans who have been approved for VA's pre-need eligibility determination for burial in a VA National Cemetery to log into the secure website where they can privately submit images, autobiographies, military and life milestones, and historical documents. The VLM website has received more than 165,000 submissions and has resulted in veteran profile pages in the system. The VLM already has been offering family, friends, and others a way to chronicle the life of veterans by uploading written tributes, photos, biographies, documents, and other information. It currently contains nearly 10 million interactive VLM pages. For more information about this new feature, visit the Your Story, Your Legacy landing page by browsing that phrase. And as we turn the next page in American history, we again have the right and responsibility to review where we have been, where we are now, and where we want to be in the future. The future will come regardless of whether we prepare for it. The biggest question is, do we want more government providing more and more unsustainable perks to groups of people? Or do we want our government to listen to the voters and have less intrusion in our individual rights and a cessation of out-of-control spending and redistribution of wealth that only buys votes and creates another level of dependency? The following quote, cuts to the chase, close, of the primary question we must decide for the future of the America we desire. Quote, do we believe that the goal of government is to promote equal opportunity for all Americans to make the most of their lives? Or do we now believe that government's role is to equalize the results of people's lives? This is said by Paul Ryan. And with that, we conclude the reading of the Pantograph, Part 1, for Tuesday, January 21st, 2025. I'm Janice Schweizer, and I will return shortly with Part 2.